This is the Psychedelic Theology Podcast, and I'm Caleb Graves, your very sane, very normal host. This month on the podcast, I've decided to try something a little different. I've put together a set of mini episodes about individual psychedelic compounds. These include popular substances like DMT and lesser-known ones like MDMA. I'll give different information that I found most interesting about each substance, like a short history of each use, their effects, and any overlap I found, of course, between these substances and the Christian faith. Three of these episodes, including the one you're listening to right now, are currently available on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and numerous other places that have chosen to publish my podcast. If you like these, another three episodes are available exclusively to my Patreon supporters. So not only do you get to support my work with psychedelic theology, which I pay for out of pocket, but you also get access to exclusive content starting at just $5. 1,000 light years away from us, in the Perseus molecular cloud, sits a very special compound, the amino acid tryptophan. This interstellar traveling organic compound is metabolized by the human body here on Earth to create two important substances, the hormone melatonin and the neurotransmitter serotonin. It is also the chemical precursor to one of the most powerful and legendary psychedelics in the world, DMT. DMT, or the spirit molecule, is a pretty common, naturally occurring psychedelic that exists in many plants and animals across the world. Just how common is it? Well, in 2011, the Attorney General's Office in Australia recommended banning any plants that contained high amounts of DMT, or what they said were high amounts of DMT. The overzealous top cops were embarrassed to learn that this would mean banning hundreds of naturally occurring plants in Australia, including the national flower of Australia, the golden wattle. DMT has three major forms of ingestion: smoking, injection, and oral use with an MAOI. DMT is found many places, as was just mentioned, but it has to be taken in a high enough dose and in a specific way in order for it to have any effect on the human mind and body. You see, DMT is metabolized extremely quickly by MAO enzymes in the body, meaning that it normally would have no hallucinogenic effects when consumed orally. To overcome this problem, large amounts of DMT have to quickly reach the brain, which is why smoking tends to be the most common means of ingestion. By smoking, the substance can reach the brain in about 10 seconds, not enough time to be metabolized. With this method, the DMT trip lasts usually less than 10 minutes, but in my experience, it lasts even less than 5. Oral use of DMT with an MAO enzyme inhibitor is the second most common form of ingestion. By blocking the enzymes responsible for metabolizing DMT, the psychedelic can build up in the body, allowing for a DMT trip that lasts 3 or 4 hours, not just 3 or 4 minutes. This trip tends to be less intense than DMT smoking experiences, but it is nonetheless quite powerful. Perhaps because it can cause a prolonged, powerful trip, oral ingestion has been the most common entheogenic form of DMT use, or used to have religious experiences. The indigenous entheogen ayahuasca is the most famous brew that utilizes both a DMT and an MAOI, and it has been used for at least 3,000 years. We've talked about ayahuasca previously in an episode about Mary Undoer of Knots, because today multiple syncretic indigenous Christian traditions like Santo Dami and UDV use ayahuasca as a sacrament to access the spirit world, sometimes on a weekly basis, similar to how Catholics would take the Eucharist. Ayahuasca use has also become a pan-indigenous way to protect ancient traditions when faced with the horrors of industrial colonialism. The Yora people of Amazonia adopted ayahuasca use quite recently, in 1985. After their population was decimated by diseases and the conquests of colonizers, they adopted ayahuasca as a way to preserve their cosmology of the day and night world. The day world was where we do things, obviously, during the day, work, family life, that sort of thing. And the night world was the world of spirits, of monsters, of dreams, and of ayahuasca. The least common form of ingesting DMT is through an IV, but this has been the primary means of use in scientific studies. When this method is used, a DMT trip can literally last forever. Although DMT can be quickly metabolized, the body does not build up a tolerance to it, unlike other psychedelics, and redosing can happen immediately. In medical settings, then, researchers can allow DMT to be continually dripped into a subject, then withdrawn quickly if the trip becomes overwhelming. DMT trips are notorious for creating completely immersive, psychedelic worlds that give the impression of entering into another dimension. Impossible sacred architecture forms and disintegrates, time seems to lose all meaning, and most infamously, DMT entities emerge. While these entities, often called machine elves, can be also reported on high doses of LSD and psilocybin, they are most commonly reported on DMT. Machine elves seem to be completely independent and self-aware, not creations of the tripper's own mind. Some DMT entities have even provided evidence of their existence, it seems. In an interview about his experience, comedian Shane Mouse commented that, quote, "I thought this was all in my head. I was talking to these beings, and I was like, you need to show me something to prove you're outside of my head." Now, Mouse goes on to describe that he had this DMT trip where he spent the day at a surreal carnival with a purple woman. Later, Mouse says that another friend took DMT. Unprompted, this friend described the same purple woman at the same carnival who said she loves Mouse, using the same unique and surreal details from Mouse's trip. Mouse claims that he never told his friend about his own experience, yet this trip seems to share impossible similarities. DMT's unique attributes have caused some people to believe that we can one day explore the DMT world the same way we'd walk on the moon. Imagine if Mouse and his friends were able to stay in this carnival for an extended period of time. Would they be able to find each other? Have a whole conversation together with the purple woman? Or would they find that they created this carnival scape independently in their minds, not in some separate realm or dimension? This kind of exploration and experimentation is the goal of the company DMTX, short for DMT Exploration. DMTX and other initiatives want to use this powerful substance's unique properties to take extended expeditions into the mindscape and explain what they see and experience to researchers. Dr. Rick Strassman undertook a less ambitious version of this method with DMT studies at the University of New Mexico from 1990 to 1995, in which test subjects also reported meeting bizarre beings that resembled reptiles, elves, gremlins, Gumby, aliens, and more. It may very well be that the prolonged DMT experience is the next great frontier of psychedelic research, where psychonaut takes on a very real and very new meaning. Until then, I hope we'll continue to listen to and tell each other stories about our experiences with this powerful substance, and wonder whether the mindscapes and characters it creates are just in our own minds, or something else entirely. This has been a mini episode of the Psychedelic Theology Podcast. I'm your host, Reverend Caleb Graves, and I hope you'll continue to listen to the other currently available episodes. If you like this format, remember that there are 3 other episodes available for my paid Patreon followers. Please consider being a supporter, starting at just $5 a month to support this ministry and have access to this exclusive podcast series.